Hello, everyone. Welcome to myself, Max McGillivray from Beanstalk. Jack Ward, CEO of British Growers. Say hello to everyone, please.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Max. And thank goodness the sun is shining. At long, long last, the sun has arrived. I can't tell you what a difference that makes.
It is amazing, isn't it? Because the last broadcast we did in April, I think we'd had snow that week, and here in sunny Suffolk, we hit 27 degrees yesterday, yeah. And it's just been within the UK, Jack. It's just been torturous, hasn't it? This last 4 or 5 months, especially compared to this time last year. We had the amazing Annabel Makin Jones on earlier this week, and she was saying how her strawberry crop is 2 to 3 weeks behind compared to last year. Are you seeing the same with your members?
Yeah, very much so. I know it's a bit cliched to talk about the weather, but, you know, after all, we are British and that's what we do. But joking apart, you know, last time we'd spoke, we were in April and we had that bitterly cold east wind. I mean, it blew and blew and blew for week after week after week, very, very dry. And then we went into May, and amazingly, we had, I think, one of the wettest Mays on record, yeah. And it wasn't very warm either. So you've got a combination of very cold and very wet and still quite cold. And yeah, the reports I'm getting is that the crops are 2 to 3 weeks late, which on the face of it may not seem very significant. But when you're trying to balance, you know, the end of the 2020 crop and the start of the 2021 crop, or you're trying to predict when your supply is going to be ready for retailers, you know, in the summer, autumn of 2021, you know, actually does get quite important. And you kind of got this changeover period from imported product to UK product. And if you've got 2 or 3 weeks where you don't actually know whether you're going to supply product or not supply product, you know, it just adds to the pressures that growers face.
Yep. Are we going to mention Jeremy Clarkson? We didn't talk about this in the green room, but there's been so much publicity, I think in a positive manner, that if you haven't caught up with this, everyone, Jeremy Clarkson, he owns a farm down in the West Country somewhere. It's 1,000 acres, and he's been having a man run it for him, and that man has now retired, and Jeremy's taken it on, and he has done a TV broadcast on it. I think it's on Amazon, and he's named that farm Diddley Squat. Jack, why has he named it Diddley Squat? Because he's making no money out of farming. He's realised that it's such a difficult thing, farming, because the weather's against you, Brexit is against you, sheep are against you, and he's found it so difficult. And I think it's actually quite a good thing, because it's educating the consumer and hopefully retailers as well how difficult it is to actually physically farm. What do you think? Do you think that's a good...
Yeah, I do think in some ways it's a very good thing, because I think the idea that you just buy a farm and you get out there and you do stuff and you make money is completely erroneous. You know, there's an awful lot of skill and understanding and experience and, you know, history that goes into producing crops. And if you don't understand the land and you don't understand the impact of the weather and the impact of varieties and applications, et cetera, you know, it just underlines how easy it is to get it wrong and how difficult it is to get it right. So I mean, it's a great reality check for anybody that thinks farming is straightforward or producing food is straightforward. And it just might serve as a timely reminder to, you know, everybody out there that actually this is quite a difficult task and it needs to be taken very, very seriously. You just can't turn it on and turn it off at a moment's notice. This is a long-term job that requires a lot of skill and a lot of expertise.
And it comes back to this point that we talked about previously before, Jack. I think it's what 6 out of 10 kids don't know where vegetables come from. It's almost, Jack, as if we need some form of campaign, education, drive, national TV campaign to sort of educate kids and their families and their schools as to where veg comes from. What do you reckon?
What a good idea. Have we got anybody that might fill that gap?
Right. Should we magic someone up? Who's that really attractive guy down in Brighton that you know?
Oh, Dan. Mr. Parker. Mr. Parker. Right,
Mr. Parker. Dan Parker. Dan Parker, can you come in, please? Hey. Fantastic.
Hello. Good morning.
So we're slightly leading the witnesses here. So we've got the fantastic Dan Parker, CEO of VegPower on, and Dan's going to tell us some amazing, exciting news that he's got coming up. But we mustn't also forget, we've got Rakesh from Kantar. Rakesh, can you come in as well, please? And so we've got a bit of a triple act going on here. Rakesh isn't. Where is he? This is all exciting. This is like Paul Daniels and Debbie McGee. While we get Rakesh in, Dan, can you just introduce yourself and just give us some, give everyone a bit of a background to you, so that everyone has a bit of an understanding as to yourself and VegPower, please.
So I'm the chief exec of VegPower. I've got a 30-odd year history in marketing and advertising, mostly in food and grocery. I grew up as part of a farming family, and we started VegPower about 3 or 4 years ago to try and use some of that skill we have in this country in marketing and advertising to get everybody to eat more veg.
Excellent. And Dan, if it's okay to ask, can you just give your story? Because you've got an amazing story as to how you got involved in this in this campaign yourself, personally. If that's okay to ask.
So I used to own an advertising agency, and my big career clients were, without naming names, the first name that springs to mind is soft drinks, and the first name that springs to mind in burgers. And I'm probably responsible for helping sell a lot of those things. And then about the age of 45, I got diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, which had killed my dad and killed my aunt.
Wow.
And it made me step out of my little Soho advertising bubble and realize that actually what I was doing wasn't making the world a better place. And actually a lot of people were very ill, and we needed to do something about it. And what we needed was we needed to get everybody excited about vegetables again, and perhaps I was the right guy to do it. So I closed down my ad agency. And I started volunteering to get this project started, and eventually we got it off the ground, and this is what I do full time.
Fantastic. And Jack, what do you reckon? Is Dan the right person for this initiative?
He's brought a huge amount of expertise. You know, what's been interesting is that, you know, it's not homespun expertise, and it's not my view is this or my view is that. You know, here's somebody from an advertising background who has stepped into the world of vegetables, but from an advertising perspective, and also, you know, coming at it from a health backdrop,
yeah,
rather than, you know, purely, let's say, an enlightened self-interest on behalf of growers. This is a much bigger, much more holistic campaign than purely, you know, aimed at stimulating the UK vegetable industry. This is about trying to get the country back on a better system of nutrition. Are based around increasing the proportion of the diet that is vegetables, you know, and also fruit.
Fantastic. And we're going to hear Jack, if that's okay, a little bit later, a bit more about your involvement with VegPower. And Dan, we just want to go into a deep dive with you as to what you did the first time round with the publicity campaign with VegPower, and then the second time round. And Rakesh, you come on in. Rakesh has got his cup of tea, coffee now. Rakesh, say hello to everyone.
Hi everyone, my name is Rakesh. I've been working at Kantar for about just over 4 years now in the produce team. And my computer did a Windows update.
Oh no!
The whole restart, no warning, straight through. So apologies about that.
Oh, Rakesh, I call that my Raymond Blanc moment. That I had Raymond Blanc on a broadcast, and then his link dropped out, and it was the whole thing was all about Raymond Blanc. So you've had your Raymond Blanc moment. I tell you what, Jack, Dan, could you just turn off your videos, because we just want to concentrate on Rakesh, because he's got some really interesting updates to give us on the veg sector. So Rakesh, for those that don't know about Kantar, who doesn't know about Kantar? But could you just give a bit of a background onto Kantar and why people, so we can understand as to why people should deploy yourself, your colleagues, and Kantar, please?
Yeah, sure, no, absolutely. So Kantar, we're a huge consumer panel in the UK, the largest in the UK. We've got around 30,000 households. Essentially, they scan their shopping, so we track their purchase behaviour. We collect all the data that they collect into home. So all the shopping behaviour, and we've tracked that over the last 10, 20 years. So we have some pretty interesting trends, particularly over the last year with the COVID pandemic coming in. So we have a huge portfolio of clients across all areas, but obviously I work in the wonderful world of produce. So we've been working with our produce clients for a number of years to really understand the shopping behaviour, understand some of the things that we're doing within the produce industry, and of course, more importantly, to understand the opportunities and how do we actually capitalise those behaviour changes that we've seen, particularly over the last year or so.
And it's, I also find, I've said this a number of times before with your colleague Joe Shaw Roberts, that when we had conventional conferences, do you remember those, Rakesh, when people used to sit down and either Joe or yourself or your colleagues would always be brought on, and they were the most listened to elements of the conferences, because it's sort of like, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you're sort of predicting the future, but because of what you've seen in the trends behind, there's so much information, there's power, and Kantar is one of the few organizations that really understands fresh produce because of your understanding from all the data that you've had previously, the way that you articulate it to us and also to the consumer. But I believe you've got some facts and figures in the respect of the sector. Is that correct, Rakesh?
That is correct. I have put a short deck together, about 10 to 15 minutes or so, which we can have some discussion afterwards. So just 1 second, I'll just share my screen.
Fantastic. And Joe, Rakesh's colleague Joe, does this very kindly with us for a big South African broadcast that we run, and it always goes down very well. So no pressure. Rakesh, off you go. I can see your screen.
Full screen that. Can you see that? All clear?
Yep, all ready to go. Done.
Fantastic. So again, hi everyone. My name is Rakesh, and today I'll be talking to you guys a bit about the produce market and what we've seen over the past year, and also some key themes going forward into 2021 and things we should be aware of. So just really setting the scene first of all and understanding, okay, how has produce actually performed over the past year in this crazy year, we shall call it. So what we have here is just simply rolling value and volume percentage change on a 52-week ending basis. And we can see they're ticking along quite nicely, you know, in some decent growth. And the pandemic hit, and as we've seen for total grocery, everything just absolutely exploded completely. So sort of volume absolutely rocket, continued to rocket just until after Christmas in 21. But we're starting to see a slight slowdown, and that's no surprise at all. We've seen restrictions start to ease, you know, things start to open a bit more for the better, we should say. However, we've seen some fantastic growth within produce, and the idea is really to, you know, how do we actually keep this momentum up? And this is something we'll talk about in the next few slides. So really understanding, you know, why have we seen this fantastic performance within total produce? So 6.7% growth in the latest year, which is fantastic. And the biggest driving factor for this has been trip size. You can see 13.1% growth there. When I talk about trip size, I simply mean bigger baskets. We're putting more in our baskets, although we are making fewer trips. And that's something we've also seen at a total grocery level as well. So it's not just in produce. And of course, with produce, pretty much everyone has bought a vegetable in the last year, which is really positive. But what we will see later on is that there's still massive opportunities to get new shoppers into the market. And of course, when we talk about produce, we can actually split this out into both fresh and prepared. So actually in 2020, fresh veg really took the spotlight in produce with some double-digit growth. However, looking at the latest data, we can see that fresh fruit has started to overtake that performance. And two key reasons behind it have been, again, bigger baskets or trip size, and also some higher prices as well. One thing that I really want to flag and talk about in the next few slides is actually prepared. So prepared, you know, if you are a prepared client, and I've worked with prepared clients over the past year, have really struggled in COVID. And there's no surprise why as such. You know, prepared is traditionally a very kind of convenient type of mission, which is not as been needed. You know, we're not really working in the office. We're not going to our supermarkets and picking up prepared fruits in 2020. However, in the latest period, we can see we are starting to see some growth again, particularly in prepared fruits with more frequent trips, which, as you know, is very different to what we see at a total level. And following on from that, what we can understand is the shopping behavior within this. So the interaction in this case between prepared and whole head. And what we're able to measure is what we call switching. So simply, I spent £1 in whole head fruit last year. This year, I'm spending £1 in prepared. And we can understand the switch between this. And you can see here, before kind of the pandemic, prepared wasn't doing too bad. But then as soon as the pandemic hit, we saw a massive switch away from prepared into whole head. However, in the latest 4 weeks, we're starting to see those gains return to prepare. So starting to see that shopping behavior switch. Now, we must remember that Holhead is far bigger than Prepared. So it's not that, you know, we're all moving to Prepared now and we're not scratch cooking anymore. It's nothing like that. It's just that we've seen slight differences, slight movement, I should say, going to, back towards Prepared. And in the context of total grocery, if we look at the last 4 weeks and understand, okay, which of these sectors have performed really well in the last 4 weeks versus the average 4 weeks since the pandemic, Prepared fruit and veg is actually up there, along with some other really interesting grocery categories such as toaster pastries and first aid dressings. Yes, it is pretty interesting. So Prepared fruit and veg, we've seen a big sales uplift, and that's it to growth. So three key themes that I really want to kind of discuss in the next few slides. So online, premium, and organics. And these are really key topics for our clients at the moment. And the types of conversations that they're having with retailers are around these three key areas. So I just want to touch upon a few of these at the moment. So the first one, of course, is online. Now, we know online grocery has absolutely exploded since the pandemic. We saw a lot of retailers increase their capacity slots for online. And a lot of people actually went into this particular channel. And indeed, for produce, it was no different. And in the latest 52 weeks, we can see online still posing some very, very strong growth numbers at 81%. And that's being driven through shoppers making more frequent trips, but also new shoppers entering the channel too. And of course, that's very different to what we see at a total market where we see fewer trips. So definitely bucking the trend on that one. And on the right-hand side, you can see an arrow. You're probably thinking, okay, what's going on here? Well, what we're looking at here again is the switching between, in this case, main store supermarkets and then online. So we are still switching our spend from main store into online, which is why you see some of the shopper numbers increase for online. So online has done well. The discounters have also done quite well, which we'll talk about a bit later. They've had a really tough year, particularly Aldi, as we saw in some of the numbers that we've been publishing in 2020. We're starting to see some gains made there, 3.7% growth from the discount perspective. So I know Max talked a bit earlier about, you know, shopper predictions and where do we think, you know, the channels at least are going forward. So this is based on some projection data that we're doing at Kantar. And this is from a total grocery viewpoint, although produce would, you know, fit right into this too. So we do see that supermarkets, that at least their channel market share will slowly start to decline a little bit over the next few years. Of course, this is highly dependent on government regulations and restrictions, etc. But we do see that online still has a really important part to play. I know profitability is probably another discussion we can talk about afterwards, but at least from a spend perspective, you know, it's very much here to stay. And the discounters, we are looking at them to bounce back from a really tough year as well. The second thing I want to touch upon is tiering. And as we know, the most of the market is based on standard tiers, right? So in this case, 84% share of volume goes to standard produce. It's grown by 7.1%, which is really positive. But the key kind of tier that I want to point out is premium. And again, I go back to myself and my team talking to clients about premium produce. And there's a big debate at the moment about this and whether retailers are receptive to premium produce. We can see they have grown quite well. So consumers are engaged with premium, 17% growth. It still represents a very small share in the market, only 6.2%. But it's definitely here to stay, is looking to grow. And if it can capture some of those premium spend, we can actually put some value back into the market. I know we talk about price a lot within produce and, you know, the race to the bottom, particularly during that Christmas time. Some of the categories look at price really devaluing some of the categories. So we can start to understand premium a bit better, where it plays and which categories they're playing. We can start to add some value back into the produce category. And just by way of just, you know, telling you which categories have done quite well over the last year. So these are the fastest growing premium produce categories. We've got kiwis, beans, oranges, cabbages, and ginger. So a bit of a mix there, but you can see that there is an appetite for premium produce across both fruit and veg. So you're probably thinking, okay, well, Rikesh, this is all well and good, but how do we actually capture some of these shoppers? Well, you know, going back to the online piece we just talked about, what's really interesting is that we saw that 14% of premium produce went through the online channel. And that's pretty much double what we saw in the pre-COVID year. So if you do want to promote premium produce, yes, you obviously can do it in store, but online is still a really key platform for produce to grow, and particularly for premium. And if you are able to communicate the premium benefits online in a much more easier way to for consumers to pick up, then that's a really big win. Then we have organics. So, you know, organics, again, another key topic, kind of goes hand in hand with premium in terms of actually adding some value back into the category. We can see from a total grocery viewpoint, the different categories that play within organics. You can see fruit, veg and salads and dairy products actually contribute a huge part of the organics category. So, you know, fruit, veg and salads definitely have their part to play. And organic fruit and veg have done really, really well over the past 52 weeks. We've seen some double-digit growth in spend, 14.9%, and also 7.2% from a volume perspective as well. So we've seen massive engagement from that perspective. And the big reason why, we've seen an increase in trips. So we go into the fixture more often. In fact, 7.5 trips is the average trip size per year, which has increased by 9.7%, which is fantastic. So not only am I going to buy organic produce one or two times, I'm keep going to the fixture to buy it. So clearly, there is some consumer engagement there within organics. I think we have to bear in mind that when we talk about organic produce, there's not too many different types of fruit or veg that actually play within organics. You can see here that bananas, carrots, apples, tomatoes, broccoli, and berries, those are the kind of the key staple organic products which I expect to see on the market. And we've seen that in our data as well. But on the right-hand side, we've seen some other categories in actually triple-digit growth. So yes, coming from a smaller base, but avocados, melons, aubergines doing absolutely fantastic over the past year. So definitely room, not just in those staple categories because on the left-hand side, but started to experiment with some other categories, such as aubergines. Maybe it's a little bit different to what you might expect. And then you're probably thinking, well, again, you know, where's the opportunity with the market, which retailers we target? We can go through a lot of detail at Kantar in terms of the data and opportunities. I just want to highlight what we call the fair share opportunity or undertrade. And we're looking at the undertrade in organics versus their total market share across several retailers. I'll just take Asda as an example. You can see if Asda actually achieved their undertrade in organics, that's worth £16 million to them in the category, which is really important. So it's not just, you know, one or two retailers which have opportunities. There's actually a number of retailers which they can actually increase their organic share and presence in the market. And the final one, just before I kind of summarize what we talked about today, really interesting one. It kind of goes hand in hand with some of the veg power stuff that you guys probably talk about a bit later. But as you know, at Kantar, not only we track the purchase behavior, we also track the consumption behavior. So essentially, we have a subset of panels or panelists that do an extra step. They fill out an online diary 4 times a year. So whatever they bring in home, we can understand the consumption needs behind it. So looking at vegetables as a total category, we've seen an increase in vegetable occasions over the past year. In fact, 21% growth of vegetable occasions. So we are eating more veg, which is absolutely fantastic. This is what we need. However, we know that 2021, we know things will open, out of home will start to increase again, and we'll start to eat outside a bit more. If we take all of that into account, we still predict that vegetable occasions will be 5% higher than pre-COVID anyway. And in terms of what that translates to in terms of occasions, that 5% extra is 650 million more vegetable occasions to win in the next 12 months. So if you do play in the vegetable category, which I'm sure all the viewers on today's conference call are, you know, we can understand this a bit further in terms of targeting the right occasions, reaching the right consumers, and they're really understanding the needs behind it. Essentially, you know, when we go into a store, we're thinking about the types of meals and recipes that we're going to consume in the next week or so. So we can start to understand the needs a bit better and understand what's on the plate. How can vegetables play a key role in some of the key dishes, in some of the growing dishes in the category? Then we can start to win back some more occasions and actually grow the vegetable market a bit further. So just to summarize that deck. So as I mentioned at the start, produce market has done really well as total grocery, starting to dip as we do annualize, which is expected. Fresh is still leading the way. Prepared is making a comeback. We've seen some of those switching gains made by prepared versus fresh in the last 4 weeks or so. Online is still really important. Yes, it has started to slow down from a grocery perspective, but it still remains a really key platform, especially if you want to promote some premium produce. Online is definitely a key way going forward. And we've seen, you know, actual behavior of consumers going to buy premium produce online. So there's no question about this. And the final one there is organic produce. It continues to gain momentum. It continues to do well. Yes, it's still a smaller part of the total produce category, but we can start to expand the repertoire, both in terms of retailers and in terms of categories. And there's definitely opportunity to grow this market further. So that's what I have today. I'll just stop sharing my screen.
Rakesh, fantastic. Dan, Jack, can you just join us? And just for those on the podcast, I just want to reiterate Rakesh's fantastic slide. I'm just going to read it out again for those on the podcast. What will the next year look like for vegetables? 650 million incremental meals win this year. The huge rise in consumption at home during the pandemic resulted in 21% growth of vegetable occasions. 2021 will bring decline as... Help me, Rakesh. OOH?
Out of home, yeah. As out of home reopens, restrictions are eased.
Reopens and restrictions are eased, but we predict that the consumption of the category will remain 5% higher than pre-COVID. This means there will be 650 million more vegetable occasions to win in the next 12 months than there was before the pandemic. In order to seize this opportunity, you need to... targeting the right occasions, reaching the right consumers, and dialing up the right needs in your communication. Rakesh, fantastic. As I said in our preamble before, I think what you've shown us there is this sort of lifting the box, the secrets as to where the sector is and where the sectors are predicted to go. Jack, what are your views on the back of Rakesh's presentation, please?
Well, I find that absolutely fascinating. And Rakesh, I'd really like to have a copy of your last slide, if possible, because you know, I'm sort of setting about trying to build this case for some serious investment back into the fresh produce industry, because I think it's going to be absolutely fundamental to our existence over the next 10 years. But there are a couple of things which really struck a chord with me. Firstly, your point about premium. And I was really intrigued by your point about devaluing the veg category with some of the ridiculous offers that were around at Christmas. And do you sense that there is a case for sort of more branded vegetables? I mean, historically, we've moved away from branded vegetables. They've all sort of just, they've just been veg, and there's been no attempt to, you know, classify them or, you know, brand them or nutritional content or whatever. And do you think there's a case for more premium lines which are branded, so people can quickly identify, you know, what it is that they're buying and why what they're buying, you know, might be better than, you know, other things that they might choose to buy?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think there's definitely a place for premium, even O-label produce. It doesn't necessarily have to be branded. I think as long as it's quite distinct on the fixture, and then the consumer can actually, you know, say, okay, it may be a little bit more expensive, but they know why they're paying a little bit more. I think that distinctness needs to be absolutely clear to the shopper. I think when we're shopping, we sometimes tend to be a bit lazy and maybe just look at availability as the first point of call, then maybe price. If we can actually start to hit more needs and justify a higher price premium, and then we have seen consumers actually engage with premium produce. And I guess on the branded side, I've had the pleasure of working with both Pink Lady and Tenderstem directly the past 4 years, using Kantar data as well. And you've seen some of their growth numbers have been, there we go, Pink Lady. I'm a massive advocate, slightly biased since I've worked with them, but fantastic group of people there, really pushing the category, both from Tennis and Pink Lady, I should say. And they've seen double-digit growth pretty much every year. It's fantastic. And as you know, when you look at Pink Lady versus other apples, Pink Lady justify a massive price premium versus the apple. Yeah, they're still growing. They're still gaining new shoppers every single year. They're getting them to buy more frequently and getting them to put more in their basket. So it does work. Yes, there is that branded element in terms of advertising behind it, which does actually demand, obviously, a price budget for marketing advertising. But the principle is there that people will pay more. And if you can get the message right and execute it right, then there's definitely room.
Because one of the biggest... one of the big issues facing growers across the UK, and I suspect growers across the world, is that actually there just isn't enough margin in quite a lot of crops to warrant the sort of investment that people are looking for, you know, society is looking for, to get us to where we need to be over the next 10 years. And actually this idea of, you know, focus on premium, we've been very good at reducing the price of vegetables. We've been very poor at actually increasing the price of vegetables. And actually what your research is saying is actually there are opportunities out there that would enable us to do that, which I think is quite exciting.
But Rakesh, isn't there a really good segue though into Dan? What other sector could have an initiative such as VegPower set up to the benefit of the growers, and for the growers not have to actively get involved, but Dan and his colleagues, his network of marketing experts can actually look to bolster this? The timing seems so fortuitous on the back of the pandemic, as Rakesh has pointed out. The sales of vegetables within the UK are going up, and now it's like zeitgeist. Now's the time for Dan really to make, excuse the pun, really make hay to the benefit of the growers, Jack.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we'll hear more from Dan in a moment, but you know, the tide is increasingly going in favour of increasing this proportion of the diet that's around fruit and veg. And we have just got to capitalise on it. And, you know, I think, you know, it's not just from the growing industry. I think there's a strong case for a much more joined up cross-government approach to recognise that diet is so fundamentally important. And actually, you know, there's an awful lot to be gained by just reminding people about how important fruit and vegetables are in the diet.
Yeah, well said. Rakesh, thank you very, very much. And I know that you've got to scoot off to something else. As I said to everyone, really keen for Rakesh to come in to give us that masterclass as to what you're seeing in the sector. It'd be great to have you on Future Wars. Rakesh, how can the trade get in contact with you and your colleagues if they'd be keen to deploy you and your services? How can we get in contact with you?
Sure, absolutely. So I'm on LinkedIn. It's probably the easiest way. Rakesh Panchmatia, if you can spell my surname. Also through email. So rakesh.panchmatia@cantor.com. I work with produce clients and have been doing so for the past 4 to 5 years. So probably talk to some of your competitors, whoever comes into contact. So please feel free to get into contact. We can understand how to grow your category a bit further and identify some really key opportunities.
Excellent. Rakesh, what's your favourite vegetable?
Probably mango or pineapple. I'm quite a big tropical fan.
Okay, and vegetables. Come on, within the UK, if you're going to go out to buy a brief...
It's got to be tenders then.
Very diplomatic.
Live that brand. So, Rakesh, feel free to wander off if you've got other things to do. We'll let you do as you please. Rakesh, thank you very much. Masterclass.
Thank you, guys. Cheers.
Dan, what was your view on the back of Rakesh's presentation? That as Jack sort of. It seems to be a seminal moment in time now that everything is hopefully lining up for you and for VegPower to really bang this out of the park.
Well, what we've just done, Max, is I've brought in two of the very smartest people I've ever worked with in analytics, the people who don't go anywhere near like fresh produce normally. They work for the very big consumer brands. And they're working on a project for us at the moment where we've been supplied with all the retail sales data from IRI, and we have access to many other bits of data. And we're studying some of the same sort of questions that Rakesh is looking at, and it's going to be a report out at the end of the month, which is only going to the VegPower's members, the growers and grocers who support us. And it studies some of the stuff he touched on in a little bit more detail, because what we've seen is this working from home factor is an absolute key driver in this. What we saw with working from home is we have the opportunity to perhaps influence more. You see, I would use the term meal occasions. I don't think we should assume that they're vegetable occasions. The job is to make them vegetable occasions. So the obvious thing is the work from home lunch. And by our analysis, about 3 million people are going to be working from home on an ongoing basis 2 or 3 times a week. Right? But there's also the working from home breakfast, where instead of getting breakfast on the go, people might have a little bit more time for breakfast. And so we start talking about veg omelets as a fantastic breakfast, tomatoes on toast, another great breakfast. And then as we move to the evening, there's much more of a concentration around family cooking. Now, we've been tracking ingredient sales, chilies and garlic and canned tomatoes, and there's a huge great lift in scratch cooking and families coming together because they are working from home more. And so this is the opportunity. We need to turn this fundamental change in society for a large number of people. We need to point it towards vegetables rather than the other options that people could go towards. So I think it's very important we think as these are occasions, are opportunities for veg, not a right for veg. The other thing that really, really stands out very clearly in the research we've done is what I think is probably the most important word the industry needs to think about now, which is convenience, which is, why are people eating healthier food when they're working from home and they've got more time? And that's because they've got that more time to spend into what is perceived a bit of effort. You know, what's the most popular source of vegetables for children in the UK? Baked beans, right? Pizza, right? Which is really depressing, right? And we've got to try as a sector to think about how we make our products more convenient, both in terms of new product development, but also in terms of educating people as to how they can turn their veg into something fantastic on their plate without a huge amount of effort. And a lot of the marketing that we'll be doing over the next year or so is, for example, we're doing a campaign in the autumn, which is how to get three meals out of a tray bake. Because, you know, people, tray bakes are great and they're easy, but we want to show people how they can turn that into three meals from one cooking session. That's the kind of convenience people are looking for. And we need to have a really strong focus. And I think the challenge goes out to the growers and others working in the sector, that how do we make our product easier for people to consume? And Prepared has a role to play in that. But I think there are more things we can do if we have convenience as our watchword.
Fantastic. So can you just highlight where you are at the moment with Veg Power, and what we're likely to see over the next coming weeks, please?
Okay, so we've just launched our third Eat and Defeat campaign for kids. It's our biggest yet. There's a £3 million TV advertising campaign, about another £1 million worth of posters and digital and other kinds of advertising. Fantastic new ad. We've got a schools program in 1,900 schools. About 500,000 kids will have packs to take home. And that's just started. It started last weekend in partnership with our friends over at ITV. And it's a thundering monster of a campaign in its third year, and it just keeps delivering.
Dan, can I just interrupt here? Can you just say a word about the amount of support that you're beginning to gather from and momentum you're gathering from growers and fresh produce companies?
Yeah, so we put a challenge out to the industry last year. We when we started about 3 years ago, we needed to do two things, which was to prove we had a reason to exist, and secondly, to find a way to fund ourselves on an ongoing basis. And I think we knocked the first one out of the ballpark. And then we went to the industry at the end of last year and said, look, guys, if you think this is a good thing, we can get lots of free media and lots of great celebrities and we can get all this stuff, but we actually also do need to pay the bills and pay some wages and all the other things that come in running a small organization. And that needs to be met by you. And 22 organizations stepped up to that and become members of Veg Power. 14 of them are growers, and then there's five grocers and Bird's Eye and Abel and Cole and Riverford. And that funding has allowed us to increase the size of the team little bit, which is great. They're also giving us a fantastic amount of support on a day-to-day basis so we better understand the sector we're representing and the nuances in it, and we can get our communications right. And they're just helping us in dozens and dozens of ways, which is fantastic. We are truly now, I think, an organization that is rooted in and owned by the whole sector working together, which has always been our ambition. With that support, the second string to our bow is about seasonality. And there's an interesting thing in seasonality too. I think broccoli tells a really good story, right? Broccoli is in season in this country in July, August, September. Those are the best times. When do we eat broccoli? We eat broccoli in the winter with our roasts and our stews. And we don't eat broccoli in the summer when the broccoli is British. And we need to fix that if we want to support British farming. We are doing a few campaigns that are focused around seasonality. So we've just done a big push around asparagus, and we brought in Michelle Roux, Jamie Oliver, Hugh Fernie Whittingstall, Poppy O'Toole, who's a massive great internet sensation that the kids will know about, and various other celebrities to support asparagus. After, come the summer, we're doing a salad campaign called Salad Sticks, which is challenging people to put their salads on little sticks so that they become finger food for outdoor eating occasions. We've got fantastic celebrity lineup for that. We'll be doing tray bakes in the autumn and various other campaigns. It's all about trying to encourage people to eat those veg at the best time to eat those veg to support the seasonality of the UK growers. I also think to support that, we need a bigger underlying message to the UK that buying domestically produced UK seasonal vegetables is a massive great win for climate. It's a massive great win yeah. for our farming communities and our rural communities. And it's a massive great win for dietary health. And, you know, our message out to the government at the moment is I think this is something they need to really get behind to address three of these big issues. And coming together behind British seasonal vegetables will do a great deal to solve many of the problems I think we're facing at the moment.
Jack, does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. I think, you know, the seasonal campaign I think is really interesting because when you look at the opportunities for producers here in the UK, actually a lot of it is about increasing consumption when the products are in season. And there's not much point in increasing production if you haven't got a corresponding increase in consumption. Yep. And so this idea of just pointing out to people that these particular products are at the peak of their, you know, fitness, quality is amazing. So go try them now, you know, rather than wait to another time of the year when actually you could end up in eating imported. So, you know, I think it's a great campaign and one well worth supporting.
Yeah, Max, can I give you a bit of an exclusive? We have some research that we've done with YouGov that we've not published or shared with anybody yet, because primarily we've been busy launching Eat Them to Defeat Them. But I'm going to give it to you first and foremost here live on your show, which is we went and asked 2,000 people through YouGov about their attitudes and awareness of seasonality and how much it affects their shopping decisions. And the stats are probably not surprising, but perhaps a little bit startling, which is that actually, only 30% of people reckon they know what veg are in season when. But when we actually then tested them as to what veg are in season when, frankly, if you had rolled a dice, you'd have got a better result than what people predicted. It's at 10 to 14%. People really don't have a clue, even on some veg that's fairly obvious. What also stood out is that 65% of people said they would like to know more about seasonality and what's in season when. Okay. And 85% are calling on the supermarkets to flag up seasonality to make it easier for them to shop. Wow. So there is a huge, great demand. People make the connection between seasonality and environment, and they're keen to shop in the right way. It's just we're not making it easy enough for them to do that at the moment.
Guys, it's fascinating, isn't it? And Dan, just using you as our lightning rod, the retailers, it's fantastic that you got these retailers on board, but are you finding that they're also being receptive to your messaging, for you to actually say seasonality, we need you to put up veg power or however they're going to promote it, posters in the respect of seasonality? And also a double question, with the government, with the connections that you've got there, Jack and I've said this expression before, the story before, that when Boris Johnson got ill a year ago, one of the things that he stated was that I was very ill because I was a fatty. I need to have better health. I'm going to make sure I have better health. I'm going to be fitter. And by crikey, we're going to make sure that the rest of the population are going to be fitter. Are you pushing against open doors with retailers and the government in respect to the Veg Power campaign?
Okay, so if we talk about seasonality, because I mean, Eat Them to Defeat Them is very well established with all of the above organisations.
Yep.
When it comes to seasonality, there is definitely a huge willingness in the retailers to do more around seasonality because they can see that it links very strongly to their sustainability stories, which are very, very important to them. I'm sure a lot of people have seen the new Sainsbury's advert, which is very much focused on vegetables and sustainability. And seasonality is an important part of that message, I think, for pretty much every retailer. With government, there is a door ajar. We got a very small grant from DEFRA last year to do a very modest social media campaign around seasonality. But what I think we need to do is we need to bring the whole sector. There's a lot of movement going on in the sector at the moment, isn't there? Because we've got the AHDB, we've got leaving the European Union. There's a lot of restructuring. There's a lot of money moving around. And I think it's very important now for us as a whole sector to come together to the government and say, this is the support we need you to give us. And lots of that will be questions that are more in Jack's area of expertise that I'd understand. But part of the support that we need is we need to get out and communicate to the country the absolute wonder and joy of our domestically produced vegetables and why they should be eating them for themselves, for their communities, and for their concerns about the planet.
Jack?
No, I completely agree. And actually, I'm kind of, you know, mulling over some thoughts about how we can approach government to with a really compelling proposition to support the, you know, reinvigoration of vegetable and fruit growing here in the UK. I mean, you know, there are great opportunities. There's a great opportunity to increase consumption. There's a great story to tell. We probably just can't do it on our own. We need some government support. We need some encouragement. And it's not as though it's a huge sum of money. This is a comparatively small sum of money compared with the sort of money that's being spent on the generality of agriculture. You know, and I really hope that, you know, anybody that's out there within government, you know, is listening to this message and, you know, can take it on board.
I want to share with you a lovely quote, if I may, Max. I just read our sister organisation, Peas Please, is issuing their veg facts reports in a few weeks' time. And I've just read, this is a draft bit here, I've just read a draft bit this morning. And there's a line in there that I'm going to steal from them right now and call my own because it's just that good.
Go, go.
It says, veg are the golden thread connecting diets that are both healthful and more sustainable. I love that. It is the golden thread. And we just need to reiterate that message. That if we look at all the concerns around these issues, veg is the single most important thing that we need to do with the nation's health.
Okay.
Is get them. If they're eating more veg, they'll be eating less sugar. That's very, very important.
Okay. I'm learning so much from these broadcasts. Yesterday, I had on Sian Sutherland, who's the founder of A Plastic Planet. And she and her team, they've only been going since 2017, but they were behind a plastic-free aisle with a number of retailers. And we were having a similar debate there. So just briefly, Sian's background was that she used to run a cosmetics business and sold it and felt mortified as to the billions of little wiped cosmetic bottles that she and her business had produced. So she actually wanted to put good back in the world. Their approach is that they've got to go at government level and create change. And if you can get the consumer to also be excited about creating that change, you then get a win-win. So Jack, Dan, it feels like you're both doing exactly the right thing, that if you can get more support from government, because Craig, it's an absolute no-brainer. If we can get fitter kids, there's going to be less burden on the NHS. It's going to be a fantastic legacy for our kids and their kids. But likewise, if we get the consumer to get more aware, especially of the sustainability, and encouraging them to eat seasonal British vegetable, it's going to be, sorry to use the expression again, a win-win all round. Jack, what do you think?
My observation is that this government, particularly the Prime Minister, is about big, bold statements, positive statements. And I think, you know, the message around vegetables exactly fits into that category. That, and I think the challenge at the moment in terms of dealing with government is just getting government time. I think they're so bound up in some of the complexities of the problems, whether it's COVID or whether it's trade agreements or whether it's, you know, the tail end of the Brexit agreement, whatever it is, you know, it's just a question of getting government, quality government time and quality government attention to look at some of these exciting opportunities, which, you know, are opening up.
Yeah, and I would to loop back round to the point about premium and brand. If we want to improve the health of the nation and we want to grow British farming, it's about regular veg. It's about whole head broccoli and a bag of carrots and a pack of salad tomatoes. And premium is great, and tender stem is great, and pink lady is great, but they're premium products for better off people, and they will always be small. The brand is veg. And unless we make regular, everyday, affordable veg the most exciting brand, we're not going to win, whether it's we look at it commercially or whether it look in terms of public health. So we need the government, because nobody can afford to put significant amounts of money behind whole head broccoli or a bag of carrots. So we need the government to get behind the absolute, you know, what was the figures on that in Rakesh's report? 85-86% of the sector is just good old regular veg, and that's the brand that we need to champion.
Conscious of the time, Dan, what do you need from us? What do you need from Jack and I? What do you need from the industry to continue to make this a success ongoing? What do you need from us?
Well, okay, so the important thing is, I think we what we're trying to do, and we'll be doing, and we're working closely with Jack doing over the next few months, is really trying to rally the whole sector, not just the growers, but everybody involved all the way from field to fork, into a single message to government that says, this is the support that we want you to give us. Because if we come together unified, I think it's a much, much stronger ask. And British growers, and to some extent Veg Power, I think, is the focal point for bringing those things together. The second thing I would say, with absolutely shamelessly, is we currently have 22 organisations supporting us. To get to where we would like to be, to do our job the way we'd like to do it, we need to get to about 40. And we would like to see some more of those larger growers and others, such as the larger processing companies, stepping up and joining the Veg Power Alliance to see if we can make this thing more of a success.
Yeah. And Jack, just before I come back to you, I don't know if you saw it, Dan, because you've been busy. There's been a big splurge of publicity this morning about Total Produce being aligned to yourself. And it's what we're picking up is that a number of these larger grower groups, marketing organisations, they're not keen to go to any large-scale trade events over the next 2 to 3 years for all the reasons that they're aware of. But they've got a marketing budget. So, guys, and if you still want to get your name out and you actually want to do some good, and rather than having a big stand at a faraway country where it might not give, get in contact with Dan. Because that marketing spend, you can actually deploy and get a fantastic reach with consumer, with retail, with government. Dan, would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, because we're a very influential board, and at the end of the day, we're run by a group of good old-fashioned blaggers, we're pretty good at getting free stuff out of people. And so we're probably getting about £7 or 8 million worth of free stuff a year, and then all the celebrity support as well. Which realistically, the industry is never coming up with that kind of money. But what we need, you know, I would like to employ somebody whose job it is to increase the profile of the vegetables in online retail environments, because it desperately needs to be done. I can go employ somebody for £50,000 who can do that for the entire sector, because nobody in the sector can afford to do it or has the skill to do it really particularly well. We can be the focal point for that, but we need a bit more resource to do that. But I think that will come together, because I'm hopefully, you know, we're producing some good value for the members who are supporting us. And I think for an awful lot of growers out there, particularly ones that are focused on food services, it's been a very, very difficult last 12 months.
Yep.
And hopefully as we come out of that, we will be able to get a bit more support.
Yep. Collaboration. Jack?
Mm. Yep. Entirely agree. Yeah. I don't think I can add anything to what Dan has said. I think, as I say, I think increasingly the stars are aligning themselves. And you know, as an industry, we just need to come together and make sure we press home that advantage.
Okay, and Jack, I hope this is okay to use this broadcast to ask Dan off this. Dan, can we just do a one-off broadcast with you at some point so that we can show what you and your team have created for this edition of Veg Power and talk in a little bit more detail about the seasonality? Can we do that with you at some point in the short term?
We'd love to do that. Excellent. And we'll be doing some broadcasts shortly, which we might be able to share with you, is that we are about to go on tour, and we're going to be visiting 10 schools around the UK who are doing amazing things with veg. We're going to be showing exemplary work by catering teams, schools going the extra yard, some amazing schools and some schools that have some challenges. And we're really going to bring to life what it is that schools can do to help increase our kids' love of veg, because I think they have such an important part to play.
Yeah. Okay. Dan, we'll be in contact with you about that. British growers. Jack, why should people join the British Growers Organisation, please?
Well, we're here to try and sort of add value to what other organisations do. We are an association of associations, for want of a better expression. So, you know, we're always interested to talk to organisations that want to be part of British Growers. And, you know, what we're here to do is just to try and add strength and add voice to, you know, the great UK growing industry.
And websites, social media, how do we get in contact with the British Growers, please?
www.britishgrowers.org.
Fantastic. And guys, Jack.
I'm going to finish off with one interesting little bit of schadenfreude, which has cropped up this morning. seasonal labour has been a massive issue across the industry. You know, we've been banging on about it, talking about it for a year. Ever since we, you know, it was apparent that we were coming out of the EU, we knew it was going to become a bigger and bigger issue. What's really interesting this morning is, and it's been trending on Twitter, is that very pro-Brexiteer Tim Martin, who head us up the Wetherspoons chain of pubs, has realised how reliant we all are on the freedom of movement in order to find the staff that we need, and is now calling for a revised immigration system to enable people to come into this country to do these jobs. Well, Tim, welcome to our world.
Yeah, you cannot make that up, can you? Cannot make it up. You'll be fascinated to see how that's how that pans out. Guys, just to wrap up, Dan, can you tell us about your seagulls and Brighton? I've loved the soundtrack that's accompanied you all the way through.
Yes, I'm sorry, it's that time of year now where the seagulls are all nesting. There's an awful lot of squawking going on. The ones we have down here are all the size of Rottweilers with a similar temperament. But as you can see, if you look behind me, we love seagulls in Brighton. We've even named the football team after them.
Really fantastic. Dan, thank you very much. We wish you and your team all the best. Anything that we can do, Beanstalk Wise, to support you, we will do. And likewise, I'm sure Jack with British Growers will do likewise. Jack, do you want to just sign off for us?
Yeah, thanks everybody for listening. It's been a great opportunity. Very interested in your feedback, you know, and look forward to the next opportunity to talk to you.
And just to say again, thank you to Rakesh. I thought that was a masterclass. And so hopefully we can get him on a regular basis so we can get an update as to what's going on monthly. Dan, Jack, thank you very much. Keep safe.
Thanks very much. Cheers. Bye.
Thanks, guys. Bye, everyone. Bye.